Hi, everyone. It's Devin.
And Kate.
From Med Crimes Podcast, episode 3.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. I'm just kidding.
I'm gonna do that better.
Yes, you do.
Kate, I'm kind of nervous.
This is a Devin-centric episode. Devin's turn. I'm so psyched.
This is my first episode on the podcast where I'm presenting the Med Crime.
Yes, you are. All right. I just get to drink and react.
Yes, you do. And follow along, because let me tell you, this gets a little complicated. So I hope you guys are enjoying this so far. I mean, Kate and I are certainly enjoying hanging out and talking about this stuff. So I hope you guys are liking what you're hearing.
We love this. We look forward to it literally all week, and we just like text each other about it. Like, hey, don't forget to bring your fucking sweater into my basement.
I totally remembered the sweater.
Now I'm thinking the sweater.
Now I'm thinking next time I need sweatpants. I think I literally need a closet in your basement.
I wish you would move into my basement.
All right. So this week, are we ready?
We are so ready.
We'll get right into it. So this week we're going to be talking about, I said week, but I mean, really, are we doing this weekly? I don't know.
Probably not. Maybe every other week. I don't know. We'll see what we have time for. We're moms.
This time we are talking about Dr. Thomas Hicks. Dr. Thomas Hicks.
Another thing we really wanted to do was to make sure that we issue sort of a blanket trigger warning for this episode. From what I understand, it does involve things like abortion, which we know is a very divisive topic. It also involves stillbirth and child loss. So if those things are trigger warnings for you, then maybe not the episode. Maybe skip ahead.
Okay, everybody. So I don't know if you guys have heard about this or not. Most of my information came from articles, newspaper clippings that came around during that time. But there's also a documentary that you can look at that's called Taken at Birth. And so that's where I got a lot of my info, and I kind of confirmed some of those things with more information that I could find. So bear with me. It's a crazy ass story.
Okay. She's a doozy.
Okay.
So, I've created a monster, by the way. Can we just talk about how excited you've been since I dragged her into this kicking and screaming? It's all she can think about. She's like, you guys, I think I'm pretty much an addict now.
Let me tell you, I did enjoy putting this together. I did. I really don't think I've put this much effort into posting something or into writing something and talking about something and researching something since school.
Devin, it's okay to be nerdy. You guys, listen up. It's okay to be a nerd. Embrace it. Love it. Fucking lean into that shit hard. All right, I'm ready. Let's do this.
Okay, so a quick talk about who Dr. Hicks was.
Dr. Hicks.
I might even, as we go forward, say Dr. H, just because Dr. H. Hicks all the time. I might just say Dr. H. But so Dr. Thomas Hicks, born in October 18th, 1888.
That was a long time ago.
So first of all, that's why I'm like, okay, trying to find information in the early days, it was very difficult. It was very, very difficult. Trying to find information on this story, however, not so much. But so he was born in McKaysville, Georgia. So he was down south. He was the son of David and Mary Louise Hicks. He got his medical degree from Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia, and started his first practice around 1920. So okay. Around 32 years old, he started his first practice, initially in Copper Hill, Tennessee. And so just kind of, again, we're just doing a briefing, but so in 1940, so this is about 10 to 15 years before the whole med crime that we're going to discuss. This is about 10 to 15 years before that. He served time in prison for illegally, not allegedly, dispensing narcotics. So already he started like this pattern of terrible doctor behavior.
That's always a good omen.
I really could not find info on the dispensing narcotics, much about the arrest. It was just kind of like,
very early.
It was just kind of like, here's a bullet point. This is what he did. And we move on.
Bullet point noted.
So he was sentenced. And after that was over, he then moved back to McKaysville, Georgia.
Oh, okay.
And that's where he opened up his other clinic, the Hicks Clinic. He got married. He was married to Chas Copeland Hicks. He married her on June 7th of 1917.
That was another long time ago.
She was a Sunday school teacher.
Aww.
So
I like her.
Take
almost.
Someone who was almost like a golden child and put her with Dr. Hicks.
Ugh.
He was the president of the Kiwanis Club.
Whoa.
They had two children. A daughter, which as of 2019, I couldn't find any information after 2019, was still alive, living in North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
And they also had a son named Tommy Hicks, who died in 1978 from a massive coronary.
Oh.
Now, we will talk much more about Tommy later.
Ooh, Tommy comes back into play.
Dr. Hicks is no longer alive. Dr. Hicks died in 19... And again, I would hope not. I mean, we're in 2021. He was born in 1888.
He would be fucking 130 years old.
He was 83 in 1972. I guess I just have to say the blunt information. So he died in 1972 from leukemia. So I'm going to tell you this right now. He was never charged for the major operation we're about to discuss.
He was never charged?
This is basically a baby selling operation that we're going to discuss and talk about. And
whoa.
He did have charges that he faced that we'll get to at the end. But for the baby selling operation that we're about to discuss, he never faced charges.
Oh, God, that is so sad.
So we're mostly going to focus between the 1950s and 1960s. So most of the research, most of what we're going to discuss is talking between 1950 and 1964, 65.
Okay.
Okay. So about 10 to 15 years of his career.
Shenanigans.
The shenanigans. So to mostly discuss and figure out how this all unfolded, we have to start after he died.
Okay.
So we're basically going to talk about 1997 initially.
Okay.
Follow along with me.
I'm there.
It gets complicated because mainly you're going to be like, what the fuck?
Okay, cool. So
we have a woman, Jane Blasio. She's from Akron, Ohio. So Jane is the person that brought this story to light. The story broke in 1997. And it really was in the media. So the documentary that I was watching was showing clippings from Good Morning America, ABC News. Like, this was a big story in 1997.
Okay.
Now, I was 10. I don't remember 10. This, but yeah. Maybe some of you others that were listening, maybe you remember. So Jane, her mother died in 1988. And at that time, she had a candid conversation with her father about her childhood. She had many conversations throughout her childhood with her family members, and she knew that she was adopted, but these conversations piqued her curiosity a little bit. After her mom's passing, she had found a baby book. In the baby book, the birth date said January 15th of 1965. However, she was always told that her birthday was December 6th of 1964.
Oh, so she was like, wait.
So now she's like, well, what
when's my birthday?
Turns out January 15th was the date in which they picked her up.
So that was her adoption day.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes. There's still no determination on what her actual birth date is. And we'll get to that reason
that is
why.
So sad.
So could you imagine not knowing your birthday?
No, that's so weird.
Not
I have no idea
day.
How I would what I would do with that or not.
So Jane was curious as to what this was, started her investigation. I mean, at this point, at this part in time, she's in her mid to late 30s. Probably mid 30s. Sorry, not late. I apologize.
So fine.
So she looks at her birth certificate, and it says that her state of birth was in McKaysville, Georgia, at the Dr. Hicks Clinic. Jane decided to go there. She's like, okay, let's go down to McKaysville. I know nothing.
Jane. It sounds like she gets shit done.
She really... just wait. So she was basically at this point in time, this is before the story actually really broke. So she's in the early 90s and whatnot. So she's like, we're going to go down to McKaysville, Georgia. I'm going to knock on doors, asking questions. And this really got her nowhere. Many of the people down in the South, you know, they're loyal.
Sorry, I'm snapping pictures of Devin while she's talking.
So many of these people were saying to her, watch your back. You're in the wrong place asking the wrong questions.
Hold on. So people in the community just like kind
she
of
started,
low-key knew about
she
this?
She started asking questions about Dr. Hicks, about the Dr. Hicks Clinic, and that's what the response she was getting is watch your back.
That is so fucked up.
Now, we weren't born in the South. We're the Yankees. So people in the South, I mean, I've always told that they're Southern, you know, the things like Southern hospitality and whatnot, like they respect sure. each other. They have each other's back. So I think that they're trying to preserve his memory because the community really did respect him and cherished him a lot. So they were just like, lady, this guy's been gone. Let's just let stuff stay where it is.
So they were just trying to, okay.
So
that's really sad.
Finally, after multiple different conversations, multiple different attempts, she got to talking to a retired ambulance driver. This ambulance driver had talked to her and had known stories of mistresses and mothers.
Oh.
He remembered a story of one woman who was put in a sort of twilight sleep. And this woman swore that she heard a baby crying, but was told that her baby had died and that she was just hearing things.
No.
So this was only just the beginning.
Oh,
this
my just God. Peaked like my heart.
That doesn't sound right.
Oh my God. I'm so sad.
So as she further kept investigating, the break of the story in 97 really, really helped just peak. And start to help put all the pieces together. Because dozens of other people started coming forward with their birth certificates.
Oh.
And going, wait a minute.
What the fuck?
Mine says I was born at the Hicks Clinic. Oh. I was adopted.
Oh, wow.
What's going on? Mm-hmm. Because all of these families, from what I understand, most of these families that I was uncovering and researching about, they all told their child that they were adopted. They didn't pretend to be their birth parents.
Sure.
But we'll get into that a little bit more later.
Oh, man.
So all of these people started coming forward, and there's an estimate of about 200 babies that were born from the Hicks Clinic. And coincidentally, most of them then moved to Akron, Ohio. So there's just definitely a huge connection between McKaysville, Georgia, and Akron, Ohio.
Gotcha. Yep. Okay.
So.
God, this is going to be a fucking wild ride, Devin.
Oh.
Another one of your wild rides.
So all of a sudden, we've now... Throughout this investigation and throughout all the times, Jane's going, okay, so we've got 200 people that are coming forward saying that they were from the Hicks Clinic, they were adopted. What's going on? These babies that were adopted from the Hicks Clinic,
mm-hmm.
they were not, I mean, obviously we have 200 children mm-hmm. that are now adults. But it started to, as they were having conversations, it started to come to light that maybe they weren't the most healthiest when they were born.
Oh,
so okay. Jane specifically describes details from her conversation with her adopted father. He was describing the condition of what she was when they picked her up. She was covered in dried blood, which, you know, babies need the bath after they're born. So obviously, did she not get that? You know, she must
was
not have
she
gotten
just,
that care.
Like, not cared for.
So she was covered in dried blood, looked sickly, and they weren't sure if she was going to make it on the drive to home to Ohio. And I believe I recall that when I was reading that the drive was about 20 to 24 hours.
From Akron to McKaysville.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So she got to talking. So all of these 200 people that have come forward saying that they were born at the Dr. Hicks Clinic, they're now all referred to the Hicks babies.
I see.
So when I say Hicks babies, I'm talking about these adults.
Group of 200
this group
people.
That have now formed almost like a support group of each other.
I see. Okay, that makes
sense. So these Hicks babies discovered that
Hicks
babies.
The babies were not.
Many of them were born at a low birth weight.
Oh, interesting.
So this trend was discovered when they were all talking with each other, and these babies were born 4 pounds, 2 ounces, 3 pounds, 5 ounces.
Oh my God. So not like
4 pounds,
low, normal,
ounces.
Like low. 4 pounds, 5 pounds.
Yeah, 3 pounds, 5 ounces. One of them's on record.
So premature.
Yes.
Wow.
They were described as being able to literally, I know we all say this about a newborn, you can fit in the palm of my hands, but these babies were literally fitting in the palm of their
hands. Can you imagine
hands.
A 3 pound, any of you out there who've gone, been through a premature birth or had a very, very small baby? I mean,
my son was
incredible.
Born at 36 weeks.
Yes.
And he was 6
And he
pounds,
was premature.
He
yeah,
was
at 36
6 pounds,
weeks.
11 ounces.
Yes.
At 36 weeks.
Yes.
So... we'll get let's
that
keep
so
listening let's keep
okay,
talking
I'm staying tuned I'm so, sorry I just oh my heart
so they could fit in shoe boxes.
Oh my God,
they were fitting
baby.
In shoe boxes. They were some of these parents were putting them in shoe boxes on the ride home to their adopted place.
What the fuck? fuck?
Diane Warner is a Hicks baby that was born in September 19th, 1960. She weighed 4 pounds, 4 ounces. Her adoptive mother is one of the only mothers that is still alive at the time.
Oh, wow.
Yep. And,
wait, she's still alive currently?
At least as of the time that the documentary was made, which was in 2019.
Gotcha.
So she recalls having a conversation with Dr. Hicks and looking at this baby who is so tiny and so small. And he literally said to her, if she didn't make it, there would be a replacement baby. So
there would be a...
This is essentially how the adoptions went down.
Hold on. Can you imagine... I'm sorry to interrupt, but can you fucking imagine being told, if this one doesn't make it, there will be a replacement baby?
And let's talk, like, in modern adoptions, if you're adopting a child that is sick, you're taking that on.
You take that responsibility, and it's not like there's no fucking 30-day guarantee on the health of the baby. Oh my God, my mind is blown already, Devin. I can't.
Basically, the Hicks Clinic was in a plaza. And these adoptive parents would drive around the back most of the time at night. They would drive around the back. The baby was given out the back door to the clinic, put in the car, and he said the birth certificate would come in the mail. They paid cash, and they sent them on their way.
So these parents had to know that this was illegal.
We'll get there.
Oh, my God, motherfucker.
So...
So unbelievable.
So Dr. Hicks is obviously thinking that there's a high demand. He's talking about replacement babies. He knows these babies aren't doing well. You know, he's just like, oh, that one doesn't make it. I'll give you another one.
What the fuck?
Jane,
honestly,
in her investigation, decided that she wanted to talk to an expert neonatologist. Because, again, Dr. Hicks is dead.
Dr. Hicks is dead.
We can't get confessions from him. We
can't talk to him.
Yeah.
We
and most of the records are 20 to 30 years old at this point. So again, and then obviously to talk to him and to put all the pieces together. So a lot of it is conjecture, conspiracy. So Jane decides, she's like, well, this is a coincidence. Dr. Hicks is talking about replacement babies. These babies look sickly. They all have low birth weights. She talks to Dr. Henry Lee, who is an expert neonatologist. There is a high suspicion that these mothers were induced.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Early, way too early.
Obviously, if the babies were born.
God, so sad.
Dr. Henry Lee describes that 4 pounds is the average weight of a baby born at 31 to 32 weeks gestation, which is probably about right, considering I said my son at 36 was 6 pounds, 11 ounces.
Yes.
Little Miss to Andrew. Cutie patootie.
Oh, Andrew, we love ya.
Nowadays, what happens in modern times, if a baby is born at 35 weeks or earlier, they go to the NICU, nutrition, oxygen management, watching their blood sugar.
Yes.
During this time frame that the transactions were going on, he wanted to kind of describe, like, the dangers. So he said during the time frame of these transactions, you know, early 60s, late 50s, early 60s, I don't know if any of you recall, but President Kennedy. So him and his wife, Jackie, gave birth to their premature son, Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
And he was born at 34 weeks.
Okay.
The president had access to the best health care mm-hmm. for his son. They were able to do everything. And he ultimately died shortly after his birth. So that's obviously
risks.
A huge,
yes.
You know, huge story. People recollect that.
Exactly. I worked in labor and delivery for a time, and we saw a lot of babies being born early, and we tried to avoid it because in our facility, we did not have a NICU. So mm-hmm. we could not deliver babies unless it was emergent that were before 36 weeks gestation.
Correct. Right.
Otherwise, we would have to try to transfer the mom before she delivered or have a transfer crew there waiting for when the baby was born to start managing the baby.
Yes.
Because these babies would either not, you know,
I remember
need a lot of
from,
support.
I remember
very
that
scary.
From the story of my son because he was born literally the day I turned 36 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, okay, we finally made it where he could be born here. Obviously,
exactly.
Still not knowing what's wrong with him, but... A few days leading before that, when he was 35 weeks and 5 days, everybody was very nervous.
So scary.
The president at the time can have a child born at 34 weeks and be given the best health care and doesn't make it.
Yes.
We now have 200 babies who are all have known to be suspected to be born prematurely because of their low birth weights. It makes you question how many more babies were there that
right.
did not survive.
Exactly.
Especially if he's just saying to one of the mothers, don't worry, I'll get you a replacement baby.
Oh my God, that really just pisses me off.
So can you imagine that? Two hundred are born living into adults to participate in all of this and have the support group and everything. But how many of there that we don't know about?
So sad.
It begs the question, was he inducing these women to keep up with the high demand of needing the adoption to be done?
Oh my God. And just saying I'm sorry, your baby passed away and you can't even see them?
Yep.
Sorry, I don't, if I'm skipping ahead. I can't wrap my head around this. Some people are just fucking crazy.
Yeah. So many people, again, you know, I kind of talked about how briefly touched upon how in the South they're saying, oh, you're asking the wrong questions. You know, you watch your back. Because, again, many people respected Dr. Hicks, president of the Kiwanis Club. The wife is a Sunday school teacher. So the family has a good reputation. He's the family doctor in town. So everybody wanted to believe that when this all broke, that it must have had to be done with good intentions. Well, if he was doing this, was it for good intentions?
There had to have been a reason.
Exactly.
A medical necessity.
So I guess on the side, now, again, we're prior to Roe v. Wade because we're in the 1950s
right,
and early
right, right.
60s.
Okay.
Yep. Like I said, they believe that he's doing this with the best of intentions because many of the women wanted abortions. Many of the women were coming to Dr. Hicks for illegal abortions.
Like very late term?
I don't know. I don't think many of them were late term. I think they were semi-early or midterm. Women would come to Dr. Hicks mm-hmm. for abortions.
Okay.
They would see his advertisements on telephone booths, bus stations, bridges, would perform these illegal abortions for $100.
Oh my God.
Like, so we now have women who are in this state and they are like, I don't want this baby. It's not legal. What can I do? Oh my gosh, here's a phone number. $100. Go to Dr. Hicks and I can get an abortion.
Jesus Christ.
Now, Dr. Hicks did try to have the women keep their babies.
Okay.
He did try. So there were some good intentions there. But ultimately, he would perform the abortions if he was not able to convince the mom to keep their pregnancy.
Okay, I see.
So it's said that if he was able to convince a birth mother to keep their pregnancy, he would help to support them until they gave birth and he would put their babies up for adoption.
Oh, I see what you're
doing
there.
So it sounds admirable, right? It sounds admirable in the beginning. He's trying to avoid the killing of these babies when they're, you know, before they're born, which I know there's a huge debate even today.
Yeah, we're not going to disclose our opinions. This is a very divisive issue. We're just stating facts here.
I'm just stating what was going on at the time frame. This was before Roe v. Wade. Abortions were still illegal at that time. And so he was trying to get women to keep their babies by offering them a place to stay, telling them that he would house them and whatever till they got through the pregnancy, and then he would put their children up for adoption.
I see. Okay.
Okay. So there is some righteousness there. However, everyone's thinking, is this how it started? Sadly, no.
Oh, my God.
Because it almost makes you wonder, how did illegal abortions go to illegal adoptions and whatnot?
Sure.
But we're going to talk about Stephen Dilbeck. Stephen is believed to be the first Hicks baby that was quote unquote sold at the Hicks clinic. So he's been told.
Oh.
So he's been told his birth date is January 20th of 1950.
Okay.
Out of the Hicks baby group, he is the oldest there. So that's why they are to believe that he might have been the first Hicks baby. Okay. So obviously they're all sharing their stories and what they believe to be their birth dates.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why a lot of them have a hard time believing what their birth dates was is, like I had said earlier, he would just send the baby out the back door and tell them that the birth certificate was coming in the mail.
Oh, my God.
Well, when the birth certificate would come in the mail, the adoptive parents were listed on the certificate as the birth parents.
Oh, wow.
So this automatically was forged. This was automatically forged that that the adoptive parents were the birth parents.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not those birth dates were accurate, it's unsure.
Yeah.
The only thing that kind of clued all of them together was that it said that they were born at the Hicks Clinic.
Wow. Okay.
So this also becomes problematic for all these 200 babies because trying to find their birth family, They have nowhere to start.
No, God.
They have nowhere
well,
to
how
start
would you even
because
start?
Their birth certificate says that oh, their adopted God. Mom and dad is their adopted
that's
mom.
That's really
and dad.
Ridiculous. Okay.
So that's why if Steven's birth date is legit, this makes him the oldest Hicks baby that we currently
I see.
Know
if
of.
It's legit. Okay.
If it's legit. So there's a lot of if, ands, or buts in conspiracy and conjecture. But so Steven was adopted or sold into a family that wasn't kind to him.
Oh,
he definitely
no.
felt like an outcast,
oh,
the
so
black
sad.
Sheep. He never got accurate information on what his about his birth family. And did the adoptive families know? Probably not.
Wow.
Most likely not. This family was not kind to him. He was always treated differently. So Steven had been told as a child that his mother died in childbirth.
Okay.
So that's kind of what they told him. So the story was also never consistent. Over time, it made him think, okay, what is going on? They changed it from, oh, she died during childbirth. Oh, they gave him up because of this. He describes being a young adult on his hands and knees, begging for the truth. Just like, please tell me where I came from. Tell
Jesus,
me what's going on.
Can you imagine just not knowing that?
I mean, so Steven right now, if he was born in 1950, he's 71. And so can you imagine being a young adult, and here we are 50 years later, and he recalls being on his hands and knees saying, please, please tell me where I came from.
Holy
please
fuck.
Tell me what happened to my birth family.
So sad.
Especially, I mean, fortunately for most of these babies, they were given to a solid adopted family.
Yes.
Who wanted them. Steven, unfortunately, he was not part of that. So Steven never got the truth. His adopted family never told him anything. They just kind of stuck their ground. So Steven went on for many, many years having nothing to go off of, no stories from his adopted family. But finally, DNA made his connection.
Oh.
So really, the bringing on DNA on board is what has made the connections to some of these. But again, they still have very little to go off of.
Right. Okay.
So there was a lot of cross referencing in the investigation with these people that were helping the Hicks children to try and find their family. They were cross referencing people that might have known Dr. Hicks, worked with him, been in this area. They were spending time looking at the census records and seeing if there was any hit off of the DNA that had been taken. There was a distant match. So this connected. The DNA that was there connected Steven to a cousin. Now, a lot of they were also doing cold calls, basically, like anyone who came up on the DNA, like,
oh they
hi.
Would just like pick up
would
the phone
you have
and call them?
Maybe known someone from McKaysville, Georgia that was born at the Hicks Clinic. And I mean, picture getting spam now, like we all hang up on these people or don't even answer the phone, right? So these were a lot of cold calls getting nowhere. Well, finally,
these are not your average car warranty fucking spam
just
calls,
coincidentally
people.
I guess they pick up the phone and they talk to this woman who remembers a story from her aunt Beulah.
I'm so
I know,
sorry.
I apologize. Awesome. I did do the same thing when I was, yeah.
We love you, Beulah.
So
I'm sorry.
So the woman that they're speaking to on the phone remembers Aunt Beulah. So Aunt Beulah was at the Hicks Clinic, gave birth at the Hicks Clinic, but we're told that her children were stillborn at birth.
Oh, Aunt Beulah. So two of them?
So,
wow,
because of DNA and because of the cold calls and Steven's cousin picking up the phone, they were able to do a little bit more research, make some connections. And because of that, Steven was able to meet his half sister.
Oh, yay.
The half sister never knew he existed because she thought he was dead. The mom.
Oh, my God. Right.
His half sister growing up.
Everybody was told that he was stillborn.
His half sister growing up.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine?
Talk to her mother. Their mother was Beulah. So she was, they always talked about how it worked and everything and what happened when the babies were born and what, you know, with the fact that they weren't alive. And so his sister grew up believing that her brothers were dead.
Wow.
I guess at the time that the boys were born, that this family was told by Dr. Hicks that he would take care of the arrangements.
Wow.
Dr. Hicks told them that he buried them in unmarked graves at the city cemetery. Ugh. So the big question is, Stephen is obviously alive. They were not he was not buried in an unmarked grave. That was the story that they were told. If Stephen's mom gave birth to what she thought was two stillborn sons, Stephen's been identified. Where is his twin?
So sad.
At the moment, we have no idea what has happened to his twin. Was his twin stillborn and Stephen was not? We don't know. Is his twin out there? We don't know.
Oh, so sad.
It's been 71 years. Stephen now has a half-sister that he's able to have a relationship with, which he still does.
Yeah.
So with the theory that Stephen, that we know of, is the oldest and first Hicks baby, then Dr. Hicks definitely had this baby selling ring or black market adoptions. It all started with a lie. It did not start with good intentions. He may have had some good intentions in there, but it didn't start that way. It started with him telling a mother, "Your children are stillborn. I will bury them."
Oh my God.
When really he sold them out the back door.
He sold them.
At least one of them.
Oh my God.
So you kind of had asked about the adoptive parents, right? They had to know that this was illegal. But again, I don't know what times were like in the 1950s and 60s. But from Diane's.
I feel like, how could you not know? I mean, I could be wrong.
I know. But so from Diane's mother, the only adoptive parent that is alive that actually spoke to Dr. Hicks, she was able to kind of give us some insight into what it's like being the adoptive parent to go on this end. And they definitely knew that it wasn't fully right. Did they know how illegal it was? What he was doing to get the babies? No. So Diane's mother kind of describes that they didn't fully understand the repercussions. They were desperate. To be able to adopt in the 50s and 60s, you had to have no history of divorce. Mm-hmm. You had to own your own home. You had to have money in the bank and free of debt.
I see.
So you had to have all of these things. So
there were a lot of people that didn't meet those criteria.
Correct.
But still wanted to be parents. So, like, rightfully so. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that mm-hmm. would be great parents.
And I don't know what fertility treatments, the costs and all that stuff were back in the 50s and what they had.
Or even
whatnot,
what was available. Exactly.
Exactly. But picture, okay, so I own my own home, but I have debt from trying to have my own biological child. Well, sorry, now you can't adopt.
Oh, that's so
sad. There's so many criteria that was there. That was hindering these families to adopt.
Wow.
So they were so desperate for that to have a family that when Dr. Hicks called, these families came. Wow. He would call and say, "You need to be here within 24 hours. They would drive all day and all night to get there to have the adoption. And he sold these children for $1,000. He would call the families.
$1,000.
I have a baby ready for you. Give me $1,000 and you have a child.
I'm going to real quick look up how much $1,000 is now.
What
just because I'm curious.
Is to? Yeah, that'd
yeah,
be great.
You can continue. I'm just looking.
Two.
Okay,
from
so.
From 1950 to how much it's worth now.
This said for the equivalent, so $1,000 in 1950 would be equivalent to approximately $11,476 in this day and age. And that's okay. A cumulative price change of about 1,047%.
Whatever that means.
It's a fucking
but basically
price
equivalent demon. Now, if this was happening now, you could, if you brought 11,000 cash to a doctor at a clinic and handed it to him, he'd send you out the back door. And
wow.
Now 11,000 in this day and age is nothing compared to what adoptions actually cost. It's not, it's going to cost you a heck of a lot more than $11,000.
$30,000 to $50,000,
yes,
I believe.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we've kind of talked about the problem about how these parents, about why they couldn't find their parents, right? So right. His record keeping was terrible. There essentially, that we know of, was none. We know that he would put the adoptive parents as the birth parents, so that basically erased any trace of the birth mother.
So sad. Wow. Just making it like it never happened.
Pretty much.
Wow.
So the hard part about trying to get the accurate information is that there's hardly any proof of record keeping.
Right.
You can't. You go into what the Hicks Clinic is now, and there's just no documentation.
There's just nothing
anywhere.
Wow. So sad.
Birth certificates were falsified. They came later. However, again, I said that most of this, it's hard to try and put all the pieces together when someone's been dead for 30 years.
Yes, it is.
So one large, fairly large conspiracy theory is that Dr. Hicks was buried with his medical, with his records.
Whoa.
Was he
really?
Put into the ground with his records, or was it put into the mausoleum, the Hicks family mausoleum?
Oh, he's now, in a mausoleum? Fucking dig him up.
Dr. Hicks.
Burn him.
Dr. Hicks was not buried in his mausoleum. He was buried next to it.
I see.
So he has this big, gorgeous mausoleum that can hold four family members, and none of them are in there. So then why is it there? So
weirdos.
Jane, good old Jane. We're going back to Jane, who started the whole thing.
We love you, Jane.
She got a search warrant.
Yes,
she got
Jane.
A search warrant for them to look into the mausoleum. So they were able to look into the mausoleum, open the doors. They put the search warrant on the back of the steel door. It was taped up there. That way, if there was any question of what they were doing. But they opened up, and then there was nothing inside immediately to what they could see.
Okay.
Without going beyond the crypts.
I see.
So when you open up the steel door, you're looking at four marble crypts.
Okay.
Okay. Didn't go beyond that. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where it stopped.
Gotcha.
So they never opened them. That's how I've already said that.
Right.
We're going to go to 2019.
Oh, that was not long ago.
So we've now gone from 1997 to 2019.
Yep.
Dr. Hicks' granddaughter, Sally Cobb.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She decided that she was going to have a locksmith. So Sally, we're going to get to her later. But at the moment, when we're talking about this conspiracy, she had a locksmith open the mausoleum. So she's Dr. Hicks' granddaughter.
Right.
She's able to, this is her family's.
Okay.
This
so
is her family's mausoleum. She
so
doesn't
she can
need
do
to
what
get
she
a
wants.
Warrant. Yep.
Yes.
So she has a locksmith open the mausoleum again, and this time go beyond the marble doors into the crypts.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, girl. You do you.
They decide to open all four of them. Three of them were empty. One was not.
Oh.
What was inside the one was the original search warrant.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Hold on. I'm so confused.
So in 97, when
so
good
confused.
Old Jane obtained the search warrant to get inside the crypts, to look inside the mausoleum, they taped it to the back of the steel door.
Yeah.
Here we are in 2019.
And it's in the fucking crypt.
And it's behind a marble door.
What happened?
That is the only thing that is inside the crypt. Is just this deteriorated piece of paper that is the search warrant.
I'm so confused.
Mm-hmm. So.
What?
Nobody knows how this happened.
Ah!
Shocker.
Crazy.
Officers from current day or the original officers from 1997 couldn't give any information. I don't know how that happened. Jane spoke to the original person who signed the search warrant. They got nothing.
And it's not like they put fucking cameras.
So
in mausoleums,
it begs the question of who helped him.
Wow, exactly.
Holy
who's
crap!
Who's covering
this
up his shit?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Who's covering up this stuff? Because again, we can't talk to Dr.
Man.
Hicks. So all of this is like trying to put the pieces together.
Dr. Hicks is dead.
Yes.
Yes.
So there's another conspiracy theory, which we're about to get to. I've mentioned Sally. Sally Cobb, which is Dr. Hicks' granddaughter.
Sally.
So the other large conspiracy with this is how many of the stolen Hicks babies are actually related biologically to Dr. Hicks.
Oh, no.
Yep.
Damn it. A whole other layer. I can't handle it.
So now we have to go further in detail and talk about Sally Cobb.
Sorry. Okay. Hi, Sally.
Dear old Sally.
Oh.
Dear, dear old Sally. So Sally Cobb, God. Dr. Hicks' granddaughter,
mm-hmm.
is a Hicks baby. What? She was adopted from the Hicks Clinic by Dr. Thomas Hicks Jr. So back in the beginning when I said Dr. Hicks had two children.
Thomas Jr.
has adopted Sally, him and his wife, have adopted Sally from the Hicks Clinic. Tommy's wife couldn't have children.
Oh.
So alas, she was adopted from the clinic.
Okay.
Tommy Hicks Jr. died in 1978 at the age of 59 from a massive coronary.
Right.
Now, Sally, growing up, obviously she grew up part of the Hicks family. She knows of actual circumstances where her grandfather had affairs on the side. And was never actually a faithful man to his Sunday school teacher wife.
So he was just like a dick in many different ways.
So then she started to wonder if her dad did the same.
Wow.
It's known that my grandfather has been out and around screwing around with these people.
Sure.
Potentially having illegitimate children.
Wow.
Did her father do the same?
Wow.
So she started to wonder is her adoptive father really her biological father?
Oh.
Was she adopted by Tommy Hicks Jr.? And is he actually her father?
Okay.
I saw pictures of the two of them. And I don't know if you're able to pull up on Google right
I'm
now.
I'm on it.
So you
I'm on
understand.
It right now. Hold on.
So I have found the wow. comparison photos. It's like a side-by-side of Thomas Hicks Jr. and Sally Cobb.
I mean, they look really similar.
So you can see why Sally, throughout all of her life, is like...
If you're able to screenshot that later and send it to me, then I can post it.
Yeah. So she wants to know, is he my dad?
Yes.
Is my adoptive father really my biological father?
Wow.
Now, wouldn't you agree that... Those are pretty uncanny. Like,
I mean, uncanny is an mm-hmm. understatement. They look exactly fucking alike.
She was wondering. Now, she had a great relationship with her father.
Okay, cool.
She describes she gets emotional, you know, because obviously he died fairly young. Mm-hmm. So she gets emotional about how much she misses him. Everything talks about her childhood. But she really wondered if he had affairs on the side and his father's clinic was a way for him to raise his illegitimate child. Wow. Because his wife was not able to have her own. Are we ever going to know this?
No.
How do we know?
Nope.
Right? Because her father died.
Yeah.
So how is there any proof to figure out if he's her father?
Wow.
So we've, along with Sally's questions of whether or not her father is her biological father, a lot of the Hicks babies notice some commonalities between a lot of them. A lot of them have red hair, blue eyes.
And red hair is very rare, less than 1% of the population.
Okay. So with that information, a lot of the, and again, along with a lot of stories that have come up throughout the years, many of the 200 Hicks babies, there's a few of them who have wondered, is Thomas Hicks Sr., are they related to him in some way? Because we know that there's already stories about what he did on the side outside of his wife and whatever.
Sure.
Not. So. How do we get the answer? Anybody know?
DNA test.
DNA test.
So hold on.
DNA test.
I'm so sorry to interrupt, but I have a question. Mm-hmm. So is the theory then that he just like slept with many women to inseminate them? And then if they decided to not carry out the pregnancy, then he would ultimately sell
the question,
their babies?
The question has been raised. Was he getting women pregnant to support the demand of the illegal adoptions?
I see. Okay.
Was he inducing women to support the illegal adoptions?
That's pretty fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Continue.
So Sally, as Dr. Tommy Hicks Jr.'s daughter, decides that she's been living with this curiosity for far too many years.
Yes.
And she also wants to help the investigation with the other Hicks babies that she's a part of, mm-hmm. because she was adopted from that clinic, in figuring out the answers. She decides she wants to exhume her father's body.
Oh, wait, for DNA testing?
Mm-hmm. Oh. So that little crack you made about dig them up? Yeah. They did that. So... Exhuming a body is obviously not easy.
No, that's a whole ass thing.
It's a legal process.
Yep.
Once the remains of a person are in the ground, they become property of the state.
Oh, so, I guess I didn't know that.
Okay, so basically, you have to file a petition and get a court order. Mm. And it's not like the court's going to be like, oh, you want to find out? Sure. Here, I'll sign it. Dig up your father.
Sure.
No. There has to be good reason. And is the reason more than just her curiosity? And I truly believe that if it was just Sally, it probably would not have been granted. Mm-hmm. But because of the huge severity of what the volume of what is going on, then the judge is like, yeah, okay, you can exhume your father from the ground.
A
licensed funeral director performed the disinterment.
Oh, that's a word.
Well, it's called interment when you're buried into the ground. Oh. So this essentially is disinterment.
Okay. Vocab lesson from Devin. Thank you.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm. They transported the remains and had DNA collected by a medical examiner.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the huge question is, okay, fine. This all sounds well and good. Okay, let's dig them up. Let's take the remains. Let's get a medical examiner. Again, Tommy Hicks died in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking 40 years, 41 years.
Sure.
He was exhumed in 2019. No one knew the condition of the body that he would be in. 41 years he's been in the ground. There are so many different factors.
Yes.
He was embalmed. So they know that.
Okay.
They know his body was embalmed. So because of that, he could look exactly like the day he was laid to rest.
Wow. Really? That long a time?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
He could be down to skeletal bones.
Oh. So there's a lot of variables.
Or worst case scenario, he could be somewhere in between.
Worst case scenario.
Worst case scenario.
Why is that worst case scenario?
Because the body is full of decay in its mm-hmm. in its process of decomposing. So okay. he could look exactly like he was the day he laid to rest.
Mm-hmm.
Or that could be just looking at skeletal bones. Or right. he could be looking at decomposing muscle, fat, skin, all of that.
Right.
That's why somewhere in between would be worst case scenario.
Right, but are you talking from like a DNA collection perspective or just like physically worst would be
worst case scenario for the person who has to open that casket?
I see what you're saying. Okay, I'm there. Yeah. I got you. Yeah, that would definitely
not
be gross.
Not so much for DNA collection, but yeah. for the process of all involved.
I thought you meant that for DNA purposes, no. that would be the worst case
nope.
scenario. I was like,
no.
oh, why?
Okay. Worst case scenario coming from the person who has to take that casket and go, okay, here we open it.
That would be my worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. I'm not that guy. That's gross.
So there's also many different factors as far as environment.
Yes.
So you have the casket and then you have, God, what's the word? It's like a tomb. You know, it goes around the casket.
Oh, yeah. What is that thing?
So
I don't know what that
and
thing
then
is.
They go
anybody
the
out
ground.
There who knows what that is, please.
It's said a million times in throughout everything that I've read, but of course it's just
message us, let us know what that is. We don't know. we're a mess. We've been drinking. It's a whole it's a whole mood.
So water is a huge factor. If water gets yes. through, we're gonna call it a tomb until we find out what this word is. If water gets through the tomb into the casket, Is it ruining the condition of the casket and getting it to the body?
Right.
If the water messes with the body, then there's just a whole slew of things as far as the that could be interrupting the decomposing process,
I see what
making
you're saying.
It 10 times worse.
Yep, makes sense.
So fortunately, in this case, it was the first scenario. Okay. They did have some water issues.
Okay.
They did have some water issues that got into the casket. But overall, for the casket being in the ground for 41 years, they opened it up. There was obviously an odor.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was, the van
was an odor.
The van odor. Was taped down head to toe in tarps and just, the woman even made a joke about, imagine what would happen, what I would have to say if I got pulled over.
Oh, Jesus.
But so she, and they're all in head to toe, you know, we're all talking about like our COVID gear that we wear right now.
Oh yeah, no, this is like
so
a whole
they're all
suit.
In head to toe hazmat. They have their respirators on. They're doing their best to protect themselves from what they're about to see when they open the casket. Now, there was quite an odor. You can't be in the ground for 41 years and not have any. But fortunately, the embalming kept Tommy Hicks Jr. pretty much together.
Cool.
And I will let you know, Sally was not there during any of this. She had the opportunity to be there, but
she was
said,
like, no,
nah, I don't want to see this.
Yeah, I don't blame her.
Smart
Go Sally.
Choice.
Go Sally.
So they took DNA from his femur, big toe, and his heel.
Oh.
This DNA was used to determine if he was the biological father.
Mm-hmm.
So any guesses?
I'm going to say yes, because, I mean, that's a fucking uncanny resemblance. That's my guess, is yes.
He was not.
What?
I was shocked by this as well. He was not her biological father. Or
seriously?
Is not. Was and is not. Nope.
Oh, my God.
Nope.
How? Is there, you know the answer.
Well,
I'm gonna let you talk.
How he's not her biological father is he's just not. But... So Sally truly was just a Hicks baby that was sold to Tommy Hicks Jr. For adoption.
What a resemblance,
from some
though.
Other birth mother.
That's
correct.
Bizarre.
Somewhat of a resemblance.
Okay. Cool.
However, the DNA that they collected was not at a loss. Sally got her answer,
mm-hmm.
but they were also used to determine that there was links to the other Hicks babies, proving
okay.
the fact that there are Hicks babies that are related to Dr. Hicks.
Okay.
One of the closest ones, oh, this was a woman who decided not to participate in the documentary,
mm-hmm.
but the DNA was determined to find out that Tommy Hicks Jr. in fact had a half-sister.
Oh.
Which would mean that this person was a child of Dr. Hicks, which he sold his own child. We know of at least one case where
my
he
Lord.
Got somebody else pregnant and sold his own child.
Oh,
So, I already this said guy. he never faced charges for the illegal adoptions. Had they come to light at that point in time? Probably. Wow. I would hope so. But again, he was dead many, 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 many years when this story came to light. But again, there's proof that people in town obviously knew.
Yeah.
The word of mouth, the talk about, you know.
There had to have been. Mm-hmm. Like, an operation of this magnitude had to have raised some kind of suspicion within the community.
Dr. Hicks, again, so things did come to light in the 60s about what he was doing in his clinic as far as the illegal abortions.
Mm-hmm.
And so Dr. Hicks did have to surrender his medical license after they discovered the illegal abortions.
I see.
So he was arrested on that. And on December 8th of 1964, he surrendered his license.
Okay.
Now, December 8th of 1964 was 2 days after the supposed birth date of Jane Blasio.
Okay.
So we don't know Jane's full story. She is yet to be fortunate to find her birth family. But
this proves
had he surrendered his license potentially 3 days before, it might have been the day she was born.
That could have been plausible. But this
she
is completely
could
makes
potentially
it...
be with her birth family.
Wow.
Was she one of the children that was told she was stillborn? And then sold off? Or was
so
her mother one of
her.
The mothers that wanted an adoption? Oh. Or an abortion, excuse
right,
me.
Right, 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 right.
So Jane still does not know her story, along with many other Hicks babies. But unfortunately, he surrenders his license, but there was no... It never went to trial. So Dr.
Wow.
Hicks only ever went to jail in 1940 for the illegal narcotics dispensing. He surrendered his license for the illegal abortions, but this black market baby selling, ring, all of this never went anywhere. It was all found in 1997.
Wow.
And for the last 20 something years, including now, they're all trying to find their children and their birth families and everything else. And they got nothing.
That is so shocking and so sad. Can you imagine being a mother who swears that she heard a child crying?
I know.
Wakes up and is told that her baby is dead. But like, you know, as a mom, mm-hmm.
You were just sleeping. You were hearing things.
That is just mind boggling. And mm-hmm. just the extent that he was allowed to do this. I mean, if so
this
many
went on
women
for about 15 years.
15 years of Almost. Women getting pregnant and then mysteriously losing their babies, like to death while being born, or, you know, all these adoptions have. I can't believe that nobody else in the community came forward at the time.
I don't
because
know.
They knew. Yep. Like, you mm-hmm. cannot fucking tell me that they did not know. They knew.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure if you would, you know.
That's unbelievable.
I fortunately, you know, we don't have children that were stillborn, you know, so
yes.
it's like we don't know what's going on in that time frame. Those women obviously never saw their babies.
Oh, God.
I would imagine if I was to give birth in that situation, I would still want to hold my child. And I was still, you know what I mean?
I mean,
it's obvious because they were alive. So
exactly. Having worked in labor and delivery, I mean, I had never encountered. Unfortunately, I did care for families that had stillbirth children. And I had never encountered anybody who didn't want to spend time with the baby and
right.
see the baby. And I can't imagine being told that your baby is gone and I will take care of the burial. And I can't see my baby?
And then that burial site is an unmarked grave. Somewhere that you're not sure where it is. Or if you're told where it is, you don't know exactly where they're buried because it's unmarked.
That is just the saddest thing.
I would have to
thing.
Assume that these are parents that are... I would have to assume that they are not... in a good financial situation.
You're right.
To be able to yes. bury their own child and take care of those things at the end.
Yes.
Because or else why would you, you know, I mean,
right.
maybe they're thinking it's a nice thing for him to offer or whatnot, but maybe it was an affordability thing and that's why they couldn't do it on
you're
their
right.
own. And,
you're right.
And
he whatnot, probably but. Targeted those, you know, that group of people because they were an easy target.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So that is Dr. Hicks. If you guys want to give us your comments, any feedback or any, have you guys heard of this story before? What do you think about everything that he did? I mean, as two moms sitting here, it's like,
It's heart-wrenching. It's gut-wrenching. We're so sad for these poor families.
Yeah. And unfortunately, most of the stuff is all, it's like, oh, well, is any of this true? Because it's conspiracy. Well, we do know that there were children born from this clinic. We do know that they were sold illegally. We do know that some of them were related to Dr. Hicks. So this for sure happened. And everything else that happened behind the scenes, those that worked with him, whatever, those are things that we'll probably unfortunately never know. Same with the Hicks babies who will probably never know their birth families.
Wow. Thanks for bringing everybody down, Devin, because this was kind of a huge bummer. I'm not going to lie.
Do, 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 do. We need some uppers.
We do.
Thanks, guys.
You guys, this was a really great, informative episode. I think you did a wonderful job.
Was it okay for my first podcast episode?
Devin, it was more than okay. It was perfect. Whew. I can't wait to hear you talk again. This was really fun for me. I just got to listen to a really neat and fascinating story.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, drop us a follow on Instagram at MedCrimes Podcast or a follow on Twitter at MedCrimes PC, or you can search us on Facebook, MedCrimes Podcast. Till next time, we'll see you later.
Bye.